Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone. And a beautiful Shabbat it is. So glad you're all here today. I'm going to finish up a series that I began a couple of weeks ago, exploring the dimensions of love. It's all rather poignant because this next Saturday night, we're going to be commemorating Tisha B'Av, the commemoration of the destructions of the temple. And so in one sense, it seems a bit odd to be talking about something so optimistic and joyful as the subject that we're discussing. And yet, on the other hand, we see during Tisha B'Av, we see the love of God in his own pain at our turning away from the covenant that God made with Israel so long ago. And we're going to explore some of those dimensions today and other things too. 2 weeks ago, of course, we talked about a very complex issue, and that is, how do we love our synagogue in such a way that 20 years from now, it's a Jewish place of worship given the demographics that we face? I didn't resolve the issue for you, but I suggested a way of dealing with problems that are so complex, where on the one hand, there's this, and on the other hand, there's that, of kind of seeing us in Yeshua's place, if you will, where he's stretched between the polarities, he's stretched between the opposites, opposite ideas which have to go together. But then we suggested that by doing that and all the discomfort that that causes, we die with him, but then we're resurrected to answers that are meaningful and good and right and can help us along our way. I frankly hope that you'll all listen to that message. It is very, very important. I really mean that very sincerely. It's on the web. Go to ruachisrael.org. You'll see it posted right there, the message from 2 weeks ago. And then last week, we talked about love as we considered our Torah portion, and that was all about the five daughters of Zelophehad who had a legitimate complaint, and that was that their father had died and they were in danger of losing the family inheritance. There was no way for women to inherit property in Israel up to that point, and God listened, and in his great love and in Moses' love for them and their love for the community, a solution emerges where God says, you know, these women are right, they should have every right to inherit property, and that situation is resolved. Today, I'd like to be talking with you about love again. I'd like to let the prophet Jeremiah speak to us, Moses speak to us. I'd like my mother of blessed memory to speak to us this morning. And I'd like Dr. Seuss, Horton the Elephant, to speak to us today. And you'll see what I mean. So one lesson we learn from our Torah portion is that love means following through. Love means following through. And the situation was simply this, that we, as Stacy pointed out, are about to cross over the Jordan into the Promised Land, and the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh appear before Moses and the leaders of Israel and say, look, you know, the land on the east side of the Jordan is really good land and perfect for us because we have lots of herds. Do you mind if we stay here, allow this to be the portion of the land of Israel that we will inherit? Now, at this point, Moses assumes that what they mean is that they want to cop out and they don't want to help in the conquest of the land. I'll just quote Moses a little bit here as he sits on the other side of his desk and everyone is there in his office, and he says, and here you are, a brood of sinners, standing in the place of your fathers and making the Lord even more angry with Israel. If you turn away from following him, he will again leave all these people in the wilderness, and you will be the cause of their destruction. This is where your lack of love and commitment is going. Those are my words at the end there. In other words, the assumption is that they're not willing to follow through. They don't have the love. They don't have the commitment. They don't get what love is. Now, actually, it is a bit, in my interpretation of the text here, and in a common interpretation of the text, that it is not that they were necessarily refusing to go to war. Quite the contrary, they immediately respond, we will not return to our homes until each of the Israelites has received their inheritance. In other words, oh, no, no, Moses, don't get us wrong. We're willing to fight. It's just that we'd like to come back here. We will not receive any inheritance with them on the other side of the Jordan, because our inheritance has come to us on the east side of the Jordan. Then Moses said to them, well, if you will do this, if you will arm yourselves before the Lord for battle, and if all of you who are armed cross over the Jordan before the Lord until he has driven his enemies out before him, then when the land is subdued before the Lord, you may return and be free from your obligation to the Lord and to Israel, and this land will be your possession from the Lord. So, what's the idea? The initial thought was they just lacked commitment, and it was understandable that Moses had drawn that conclusion. They came in and said, we don't want to cross over, but in fact, as the issue became clear, that was not their intention. And so they wanted to follow through. They were willing to follow through after all. And as it turned out, their inheritance did end up on the east side of the river. Now, we talk about these ancient things, and it's all great, but what about real life? What about your life, my life today? And when I think about love as commitment, I think of my mother of blessed memory, who would have been 91 yesterday, B. Nickel. And I can't say enough about her. And when we have Yizkor during the high holidays, I'll talk more about her, except to say this, that I have a very seriously mentally ill sister. She was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic, and she was dragged off to Long Island Jewish Hospital on her 18th birthday, kicking and screaming. It was one of the most traumatic incidents in our family's life. I was not there. I was at Ithaca College at the time, but just learned about it. But my mom and dad and my younger siblings had to go through it, and Janet had to go through it. It was tough. But up to that point, and for years, and even after she got out, for many years, I should say, my mom was absolutely committed to her daughter. Now, you mothers understand this better than anybody. And you can be argued, well, it's just a natural motherly response. Well, I don't know if that's enough to say about it. The fact of the matter is, Janet would jump out of the second floor window of our house. She would leave the oven on, almost burn the place down. She endlessly, when she went to a restaurant with mom, would embarrass her just by her odd behavior. You know, she was sick. She was troubled. And my mom was just so fantastic in loving her and loving her and loving her until, well, then, of course, my mother passed away several years ago of cancer. But she was one terrific lady who understood love as commitment. Dr. Seuss. Horton, the elephant. 1940, Dr. Seuss wrote, Horton hatches the egg. Have you read it before? Horton hatches the egg. I'll tell you the story. Horton, the elephant, is walking through the forest, and Maisie comes up. Maisie's a bird, and says, oh, Horton, I would just love a little vacation from sitting on this egg. I just need to get away to Palm Springs, it turns out. And Horton says, well, I don't know. I'm kind of heavy. It might be bad. Oh, Maisie says, no. You'll be fine. Just sit on the egg for a while, and you'll do great. And Maisie flaps off and flies off to Palm Springs. And Horton is sitting there, and he goes, I hope Maisie will be back soon. But Maisie, it turns out, has no intention of returning to her egg. She's enjoying Palm Springs. And so the winter winds blow, and he's still on that egg. And his refrain, I meant what I said, and I said what I meant, an elephant faithful 100%. And the other animals are making fun of him. Look at you up there. And they ridicule him. And yet he says, I meant what I said, and I said what I meant. An elephant faithful, 100%. And then hunters come and say, this is amazing. An elephant on top of a tree. We can make a lot of money. And so they ship him off to New York, and he tours Boston and all other places, and people just watch him, and he's far away from home. I meant what I said. I said what I meant. An elephant faithful, 100%. And then at the end of the story, the egg cracks, and out comes a little elephant bird who looks just like Horton. And the story ends. Now, it's a trite little story. It actually became very, very famous immediately because the lesson is so powerful. What is love all about? It is about commitment. But there's a lot more to love. There's a lot more to it. And of course, the subject could, we could spend all year talking about it. But I'd like to talk about the fact that love carries with it the potential for pain. Love carries with it the potential or the possibility of pain. And that, we think of our Haftorah passage that we just heard a few minutes ago. And here we have, and I'll just read a small portion of it for you. Has a nation ever changed its gods? Yet they are not gods at all. But my people have exchanged their glorious God for worthless idols. Be appalled at this, you heavens, and shudder with great horror, declares the Lord. My people have committed two sins. They've forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. Now, if you were to describe God's emotion as reflected in the words of Jeremiah, what is God's primary emotion here, would you say? What would it be? One word to describe it. How about hurt? Will that do? Well, we could say disappointed, you know, but let's just use the word hurt. Now, this is amazing. Here's the God of the universe presented as hurt because some people on the little blue dot are forsaking him. It's an amazing thing. And in Jewish history, and you find this in Christian history too, you have a philosophical backdrop, a Greek philosophical backdrop, which is doesn't really like the idea or is embarrassed by the idea that God could be hurt. And so the tendency there, and we see this tendency, you know, in people like Maimonides and others, is to say, well, that's just human anthropomorphic language to express something that really is not so. God doesn't get hurt. That's not him. He's so smart, so infinite, so beyond it all, that these are just metaphorical ways of us understanding because it relates to our kind of language. But I want to suggest I don't think that's it at all. I think that God is capable of real feeling. What do you think? Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's just metaphor. I don't think it's just language to help us understand something. I think that there is something profoundly, deeply emotional about God. He's not only emotion, but that's part of the picture. Mystical Judaism, the Hasidim, they get this more. The more rationalist types don't. I had a discussion with a colleague at the Needham Clergy Association about 25 years ago. Now, of course, I was much younger. He was an older man, and he's a famous rabbi, and I wasn't going to argue with him publicly. But, you know, his point was, well, love in the Bible just means obedience. That's all it means. And if you're talking about the book of Deuteronomy, what we call the Deuteronomic impulse, yeah, I mean, clearly, emotion is not in the picture there primarily. It's do the right thing, you'll be blessed. Don't do it, and you won't be. And that's part of the picture too. But, you know, you look at the Psalms of David and you look at passages like this, and I don't think that love is just a matter of a rational response. I think that it goes much deeper than that with God. And I disagreed with Sansino then, and I disagree, well, I'm not sure what he thinks now. But anyway, yeah. But the point of the matter is that God doesn't give up on Israel despite what we were doing and not doing. And that is a really cool thing. He doesn't give up. He sticks with us through thick and thin. Horton, a perhaps trite but still meaningful example of God meant what he said and he said what he meant. He will always be faithful to us. And Yeshua's suffering that we read about in our Besorah portion epitomizes this whole idea. I mean, we'll talk more about that next Saturday evening. But Yeshua, this is a very dark moment in Jewish history when the Romans and the leadership of our people in Israel conspired against the Holy One. And it's something we don't like to talk about because particularly, well, for lots of reasons, but one reason being the way these things have been used in an anti-Semitic fashion. But nonetheless, it is true that the people said, you know, we don't want them. You know, we want somebody else. But Yeshua has stuck with us. Okay, what's the conclusion of all this today? Now, we know and we believe that love is the only way to live. It is true. But it's difficult and it takes commitment and it's hard. So I want to offer you just a very practical suggestion, actually a couple of them. How about this? committing yourself to make it as easy as possible for the people you care about to love you. How's that sound? In other words, ask yourself the question every day, how can I become more lovable to the people who are important to me? I think that you can even think of that in terms of an enlightened self-interest, where your willingness to just ask, how can I make that wife or that husband or that father or that mother or that friend as happy as they can be? I think it is a worthy question to ask. And then, how about allowing this idea to flow between you and the people who are important to you? Words like this and sentiments like this. I'm not suggesting the exact wording. I may not see it your way, but I'm with you all the way. I think that that would be a very good thing as well. I may not see it your way. You're not going to agree with everybody. I don't see it your way all the time, but I am with you. And frankly, I think that's what human beings are desperate for, what people are desperate for, that sentiment. I don't see it your way necessarily, but I am with you all the way. That idea that love has that committed side and that side that doesn't that just doesn't walk away because it's a bit uncomfortable. And then I want to suggest to all of us that we start now, not mañana, but today, to live these things out. And if we do these things, I think that we can hear Hillel's dictum, which I mentioned to you last week, fulfilled. If I am not for me, who shall be? But if I'm only for myself, what am I? And if not now, when? Shabbat shalom, everyone.